dbkmediaservices.com.
You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs, John Bruce, and Bruce Knox.
Welcome in, SVC fans, to another edition of the SVC Sports Talk, brought to you by Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Your place to have all kinds of fun under one roof, located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe, right off of Bridge Street, just behind the Hampton Inn. They're open 7 days a week, except for today when they didn't. Well, they did open, but they opened delayed. We're taping on Sunday afternoon, late afternoon, on a snowy day before Martin Luther King Day. But anyway, I saw that Triple Crown was delayed today, but they're open typically 7 days a week. You can find good eats, good fun, good limousine rental. I think Shane was going to have the limousines pick us up for the taping again tonight, but that didn't work out because of the weather. 2 weeks in a row, John.
Yes, 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Yeah. So we say hello to the gentlemen who know everything that's going on in the SVC sports-wise, that is. First, John Bruce, how are you, sir?
I'm doing all right. Mm-hmm. I had to call Mr. Plow to be able to get into the studio today, but
had you had that luxurious party van or limousine, it wouldn't have been that bad, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand. And then we'll say hello to our executive producer, head cheese, number one guy at the top and rising higher all the time, Mr. Shane Combs. Shane, how are you, sir?
Well, I finally got up my driveway, so I'm the reason we're coming on late tonight, so I apologize for
that. That's okay. He's apologized a couple times here, but we're glad he got up his driveway to his house, so we're good then. We're all together again. We're here. Anyway, this is show number 241 now, if you're keeping track. I know some people do. Make sure that you're listening to the right show. And we're going to start, as we've done, I think, all season during basketball anyway, with what we call our hoop headlines. And we're going to go to the boys' side first. And I'll bet John's got a doozy of a headline. I just feel it in my bones, John. So go right ahead with your hoop headlines for the boys' side.
Elijah McCloskey on Friday night. Let me restart this.
Okay.
Elijah McCloskey on Friday night did his best. His best debut for what he would do if he was ever in The Greatest Showman on Broadway, because he put on a show in Frenchtown that night. That was just lights out. That was hard for me to get out because it was hard to believe the performance he put on. 44 points. Struggled a little bit at the free throw line, but you could just tell he was wiped out because we were doing everything good to deny him the ball, get the ball out of his hands, and it didn't matter because he was scoring. And in the second half especially, he had 31 points in the second half and overtimes.
Jeez.
And I can only recall one or two misses in the second half. I mean, he was, even when he got fouled, he wasn't missing. So there's and one opportunities. It was the step back three he made to send the game to overtime was just at another level. And that's one of the reasons why I've said most of the year and in the preseason, he is one of the best players in the SBC. And I mean, man, he was very impressive.
Yep. I saw a tweet from Mr. Combs Friday night where he said something to the effect of he was just sitting there in the gym just trying to and Shane, you're welcome to. He said, I'm sitting here trying to appreciate what I just watched. And
it really was. It was, you know, it was a game for me that's kind of weird because, you know, I have really, really good good friends on both benches there with obviously John and Hoopsie on one end there, and then Eric Snyder, really, really close friend of mine. And I thought the game was so well coached. I mean, it was such a situation where if one coaching staff would have messed up one time, that was the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was that intense. It was that tight. And you're starting all the way back to where, you know, Coach Snyder and his staff had to feel like they're in jeopardy of getting, you know, just blitzed and run out of the gym. I think Uniota had 20 points in the first 6 minutes of the game. Mm-hmm. And then I remember thinking halfway through the fourth quarter, Uniota was on 41. The adjustment that Huntington made with a little bit of an extension token pressure just to kind of slow down the speed and the spacing of Uniota. And then obviously when DeBoard fouled out, you thought, okay, that's one less shooter. And then Gabe McBee hits the biggest shot of the night, you know, from the one side. And you know, obviously Little and McKee making big shots. And I don't want to take anything away, guys, from the effort and the intangibles of kids like Beeler and Snyder and Kinzer and Knowles and you know, I'm sure I'm missing people here. You know, help me, John, Fisher. You know, I'm sure I've still even missed someone, like, and I don't mean to intentionally, Cox. Yeah, because what they were able to do is when Elijah scores at that will, Coach Snyder can go a little bit more defense. He can go a little bit more rebounding. And, you know, I thought what even Seth Beeler did, Uniota's pressure in the way they were jumping the handoff and the way they were trying to show different looks. You know, if Beeler doesn't handle the ball and in certain situations get the ball right on time to Elijah coming at the right spot, it would have been able to break the whole play down. So I want to give, you know, some of those point guard things we always talk about credits as well. But I was sitting there at the end of the night. I understood that the free throw line was the difference. Uniota, at the time, I didn't know it was 15 of 15. I knew that it seemed like Little was 20 of 20. And I think he was 12 of 12. But that ended up being the total difference was the free throw line. But I was sitting about two rows off the court down on Huntington's end in the second half. And I'm telling you that the Uniota kids were playing their hearts out. I mean, they were absolutely competing as hard as they possibly could. And McCloskey was getting places where I couldn't believe he was getting. Like, you know, he was coming off of a handoff and they would jump. And then, you know, he would beat the one guy and then he would start to go. And the midline was there. And it was like he would spin on one guy and then split two more. And it was – there was two or three times he scored where he probably scored with contact for an and-one opportunity, maybe even there. It was just – it was a special thing. So I don't want to take anything away from the big shots that Little and McKee made, and obviously the one I mentioned with McBee. I thought Lambert and DeBoard and a lot of other athletes really worked hard. I mentioned those kids from Huntington. It was everyone who played. I know Uniota played 12 kids in the game, so I'm probably cheating some of them to leave them out. But it was just a phenomenal high school game, and some of the things that McCloskey was able to do down the stretch. I just, again, as someone who was just there to enjoy basketball, I almost feel like I'm cheating that I got in for free. You know what I mean? It was one of those. It was special.
That was, I mean, I've watched games at Uniota for a lot of years. That was the single best performance I've seen from an opposing player at Uniota. And maybe the best one we've ever seen total. It was unbelievable. If you could have heard our locker room after, man, they were just, you could tell how happy they were to get out of there with it, because just what Elijah was able to do. And they knew how hard they worked, and whew, it was really fun to be a part of. And it was really special night for Elijah and really anybody that was there.
Your tweet just kind of set my mind off, Shane. I could just see you still sitting there, and they're turning off the lights on you, and the janitor said, Mr. Combs, it's time to go home now.
it wasn't quite that late, but honestly, I mean, it was. I was still sitting there and just trying to sort out, like, all the big plays that four, five, six different kids made in the game. It was tremendous. I mean, it was a special thing to you know, you always go back and forth on, man, what game should I go to tonight?
Yeah.
And in the past, I feel like, man, I wish I would have went there. You know, a lot of times I'll get to watch these games on film. I don't even know if film would do it justice. I mean, it was one of those that I'm just really glad that I was able to pick that game on that particular night.
Oh, good deal. Now, we give you your chance to have your hoop headline for the boys' side, and unless it was about that particular game, I guess.
Well, it certainly brings that into play, but sure. It's a little bit more of a wide angle of view here.
Okay.
John, I want to go with proof of parity. And if I were to read off Elijah McCloskey, 44 points, and Bryce Newland, 26 points, 11 rebounds, and Alex Blanton, 27 points, and Aaron Gillum, 24 points, hit six threes, what would all four of those kids have in common Friday night?
They lost the game.
Lost the game. So, Bruce, I just think it touches on what we're talking about here. I don't want to say, when I say parity, the standings may not always show this. The standings appear to have two teams just running away, hiding from the league.
Uh-huh.
And that is true. Through 32 minutes, those two teams have proven to be better. But I think everybody needs to understand that when I say parity, it's the incredible challenges that you're facing night in, night out, that if you're not ready to play, you're going to get beat. You know, on the winning side those nights, three Westfall kids in double figures. Four Dena kids score 14 or higher with another one at 9. Zane Trace has 4 with 8 or more. Uniota has 4 with 8 or more in the winning effort. Again, 15 for 15 from the free throw line. On Saturday night, we didn't have as many games being played. I know Huntington did a pretty good job on Evans Saturday night. He did get 27, but the stat sheet I saw, they at least turned him, John, into a volume shooter at 24 mm-hmm. shots. He was 7 of 8 from the free throw line. But again, we talked about this. Swain went down there to piece in that game where, again, he had to handle the ball a little bit more, which I think we all agree allows you to at least get him under control in certain areas. It's always funny, too, on free throws. Night to night, you get the correct people to the line or you don't get the correct people to the line. You know, Uniota goes 15 of 15 in an overtime or a double overtime win on Friday night. They go 7 of 15, if I read that right, and an overtime loss on Saturday. So it's such a bizarre, Bruce, night to night thing. Zane Trace and Adina are certainly really, really good. They are. They're phenomenal. But, they can win a variety of games. They can beat you 90 to 89. They can beat you 40 to 39. And that's a credit to how complete they both are. But to think that you just look at the standings and think, oh, that's a boring league this year. Those two teams are way out in front. That's just false. I think, you know, every night you're going out and you're messing with a kid who, you know, is 1,000 to eventually going to be a 1,400 points you score maybe mm-hmm. in certain – or, you know, it's a kid that, you know, is going to flirt with hitting 53s this year or whatever it might be. And those are such dangerous opponents that if you're not ready to play on the defensive end, you can really get yourself in a dogfight. So I just thought that Friday night, those four performances as we headline there on the homepage, that really jumped out at me, obviously being led by McCloskey and what he did there. But that I think was a good illustration of our league.
That's what keeps it interesting, mm-hmm. despite, you know, we've used parody several different ways, it seems, and parody can still be exciting. Well, guys, this segment of our podcast, of course, brought to us by North Fork Animal Clinic, Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff at 2260 Anderson Station Road in Chillicothe, where we care. North Fork Animal Clinic, they feel a good veterinarian must know each and every animal being treated and the temperament of each pet, because pets have likes and dislikes, just like people do, and they limit their practice to small animals so that they can get to know every one of their patients. If you will, they know them just like family, and they know what their owners want them to be treated or how they want to be treated. So give them a call, 740-773-7387, Dr. Blake Lloyd at North Fork Animal Clinic. Guys, we're going to get to the headlines here on the girls' side. I'm going to switch it up a little bit. I'm going to let Shane go first this time for his hoops headlines on the girls' side. Shane?
John, let's go with Coleman providing final piece of championship puzzle. I think, you know, we've talked about on the Huntington side how special Collins can be on both ends of the court. And again, historically, what she continues to be ahead of pace to do here by the end of even the regular season. that's in both steals and points. That's just not normal. That's really unique and really elite and something that I hope people appreciate. Then what's kind of cool about that is as she graduates, she's bringing along a young star in Basie as well. But I think on the championship side of things, when we looked at Fisher throughout the early part of the year, we always said that at some point you have to stop letting her beat you with layups. Well, we've said that if Uniota starts to make the three-point shot, how do you guard them? Well, the answer might be you don't. It's a situation of, I know earlier in the year, a crazy, crazy talented Benton County team had some success of mixing and matching. It sounded like Uniota found the hot hand late, but maybe a little too late in that game. But over the last, three games here, Coleman's starting to make the three ball, and it's just giving a whole nother dynamic. We are in the process this week with all the weather and in and out and cancellations. Some coaches have had trouble. We're going to go ahead and post what we have and touch them up on Monday. So by the time people are listening to the show, stats will be updated. But Coleman's probably, along with Basie and Graves, probably pushing up close to the 25 to 30 mark now in threes made, as well as a Miller there we talked about with Uniota. And then we know the capability of a Pinkerton, of a Cottrell, of a Stolle. And that particular piece, just to me, John, I'd love to hear from you. Like I said last week, if this wasn't where you're going with your headline, I would love to hear you comment on this first. As you've watched them play the elite competition, against Washington Courthouse, against Huntington, against I know I'm missing one here. Oh, Vinton County. I know we didn't see the Spring Valley game the other day, but we were both following it on Twitter there. Just do you agree with that piece of the puzzle? And is that something that you've seen throughout your evaluation of this team?
Oh, I completely agree. There were times where, like in the Washington Courthouse game and even the McLean game, where they really turned it on late, but it was like, man, they really need a second scorer. They need someone to be able to get going. Emily Coleman's call and answered big time. I mean, 10 threes between Thursday and Friday or Thursday and Saturday this week, and just playing really good overall floor game. I mean, Huntington really packed it in against them, and she really just was relaxed and just kept knocking down shots. And then, like you mentioned, Alexis Miller, she goes 2 for 2 in the first quarter, makes it a 9-point game after one. So, I mean, it's a huge piece for them to be able to get Emily going. And then also Saturday, you see Amber Cottrell was given player of the game for her performance down there. Defensively, and she scored 8 points, which she hadn't done for a while. And if she gets going offensively, and then also Thursday was the best game I've seen Cree Stolle play floor game overall this year. Mm-hmm. She was doing just all kinds of little things, making the right passes, being more aggressive. And if that happens, that's going to make them a bear to deal with coming down the stretch here and going into the tournament play.
In my preparation, too, with them coming up, John, I've been impressed with Riley Davis, the ability to come in and just give minutes. So this is a team that, obviously doesn't lack athletes, but it seems like they're starting to maybe go 7, 8, 9 deep, and each person has a specific thing they give. But that, to me, that perimeter shooting is just what jumped out at me is, gosh, when they start making that at the percentage they've made it at this week, what do you do with them?
So, right.
Okay. Let's go to your headline, John, for the girls' side.
Well, my headline was originally about the Uniota win over Huntington, but I'll go a little off from there. I had kind of a subheadline is the Adina girls start to turn things on.
Yes.
I believe they won 3 of their last 4. The win against Lukesville Valley is a really good win. I mean, I thought with how they'd been playing that they would compete, but Lukesville just went to overtime with Waverly. Waverly's going to be a top 4 seed in their sectional in Division 2. So, I mean, Lukesville Valley's a good team, and they took care of things. Only lost a tough game on Thursday by a couple points. Beat Southeastern earlier in the week. Just really impressed with what they've been able to do over the last couple weeks. Just like we knew that they had some young talent, but they seem like they're really starting to gel and they're really starting to play well, kind of at the right time, and it's got to have people in Frankfurt excited for the next couple of years, because they're a very young team, very athletic, pretty talented. You know, once things get going, they start seeing some wins go on the board, they're going to start believing a little bit more, and it's I don't think the two-shade blue will be down for much longer.
Well, on a note there, they beat Zane Trace. The Portsmouth game was postponed. They beat Southeastern, as you said. They lose by two to Piketon in a game that they led a little early, and then the real nice win with Valley. I know Stark had 20 – I don't have that in front of me – 26, I think, in the Valley game. But then they're starting to get some of the young kids, Smith and Martin. We know that name from volleyball. Give some size and length, Lovely and so forth. So they just they're a dangerous team. And you know, we tried to talk about this in the preseason about how a lot of coaches were saying the second half of the year that, you know, when it doesn't show up in wins all the times, people seem to disregard it. But yes, people that are close to it and the people who are evaluating them and preparing to play them will be the first to tell you that, you know, this has been coming. This doesn't just happen this week. This has been coming over the last calendar year. And you're right. They're dangerous.
Those are our hoops headlines, both for the boys' side and the girls' side. We'll go on here in another segment. You know, in recent weeks, we've been talking a lot about being brilliant or losing our minds or finding the state of our mind, so to speak, was the subject of a brilliant tweet from Mr. Derek Webb. Up next, we will ask Shane and John to fill in the blanks while doing some self-evaluation. Our fill-in-the-blank segment tonight going to be brought to us by Crown Hill Golf Club. Crown Hill Golf Club located at 9500 U.S. Route 22 West in Williamsport. Telephone number 740-986-4653. You can look them up on the web at crownhillgolfclub.com. And Shane, we didn't talk about this beforehand, but I know you've got some information about what they're doing out there with the simulator and so forth.
Well, we do. We've talked in the weeks past about the simulator and how they brought it back and looking for opportunities to bring kids up. It's not necessarily something for the adults in the area, but the idea was to try to get some junior. If people aren't familiar, first of all, in the summer, Kevin runs some outstanding junior events where you go up there. I know my brother and I will go up. Blake Reinhardt's taking kids up. And what we'll do is we'll have them at the clinic, and then we'll go out and play nine holes, come back and get them, maybe even go out and play another nine and so forth. It just sets up real, real well for adults who enjoy to play to get them involved. Well, what they're doing here in the winter, if you email at kidsplaygolf2@yahoo.com, they're having some opportunities to get some instruction on the simulator. And if you are a little bit older, but on our school teams and you're looking for some of that instruction as well, just something I'd really take a look at, kind of sharpen the game up a little bit before spring rolls around. So again, that's kidsplaygolf2@yahoo.com. Or of course, with the information that Bruce passes along a couple times a show, make sure you get a hold of Kevin and let him know that SVC Sports Talk sent you.
All right, guys, we're going to go into our segment called Fill in the Blank. I think we did this, 3 weeks ago or something like that, maybe 2 weeks ago. But we're going to give you a phrase here. You're going to complete the phrase, and your answers can be anything from teams, players, basketball topics, anything. And we can discuss them back and forth if we need to or if we want to. The phrase that we're looking at is, when looking back at our winter shows, I was right about blank, but I have to admit that I was wrong about blank. So you've got two blanks to fill in here. And I think I'm going to go with John on our first one here. So, John, on your first go-round here, first iteration, when looking back at our winter shows, you were right about what, but you have to admit you were wrong about what?
I was right about Allison Basie's immediate impact on the league and the girls' side, but I was wrong about Braden Collins' overall career impact. So, of course, I'm going to kind of skirt it and go to a career thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is long term. So the first time I saw her as a sophomore, I knew I saw her build and I saw she was flying around, but like I didn't really notice. I think she ended up with like 19 points in the game and really just kept the game close just by being an athlete. Well, I was like, that probably won't last once people get, you know, see her more. No, it's lasted. I mean, she has been just an extremely fun player to watch. She just makes so many impact plays every game, flies around the court, plays great defense, great off-ball defense and on-ball defense, just can score in a variety of different ways. I've just been really impressed with how her career has gone. I hope the people at Huntington, with how many people were there on Thursday, they definitely, you know, can appreciate it, appreciate what she's done over the past 3 years, because it's just been something really special to watch and just kind of a joy to have in the league.
Hey, real quick on that, Bruce, I want to take a personal opportunity to tell some Braden stories. She's a kid that when you have the pleasure of coaching her, you see this kid, okay, she plays hard. And then this is as a freshman and as a sophomore and so forth. I first was introduced to her in some middle school camps and so forth. And then, you know, you start to become first team all-league and you're doing this and you're like, okay, at some point here she's gonna, you know, have to probably tone back down a little bit and you're got to motivate like you do with older kids a lot of times or whatever. And she just keeps coming and coming and coming. And I made the comment on Twitter back during volleyball season that she's one of my favorite kids because you never have to remind her to play hard. And I made the comment on what you're saying, John, at the beginning of the year about how Allison's such a special, special talent. You know, her skill set probably meets the eye a little bit more of what you're saying. If I follow you, I agree with you. That, you know, she can do a few more. Where with Braden, it's such an instinctive, I'm just going to play harder than you and I'm going to impact. And then what's happened is through hard work is she's become a little bit better shooter. She's become a better ball handler. And it's just all come together. And I couldn't be happier for a young lady because I know how hard she works at it. But at the same time, I know what type of person she is. And I know how hard she practices every night. That's really well said, John. That's a great start to the segment.
Okay, Shane, we're going to give you the chance to fill in the blanks here. The phrase we're looking to fill in is, when looking back at our winter shows, I was right about blank, but I have to admit that I was wrong about blank.
Well, I think I was spot on about the Westfall girls, but I have to admit that I might have been a little wrong here on this Westfall Southeastern boys. So going back a little bit with John a little bit last week too, I feel like going back to beginning of the year, I think Westfall, I don't have their schedule in front of me, John, but it seemed like they started maybe like 3-7 and people were wondering like, you know, what are you talking about? But if you look back and they played the likes of McLean and they had their Uniota in Huntington games up there, and then they had their Circleville game up there and, you know, Logan Elm maybe. And I was just trying to explain to people. I even told Coach Blue after our first matchup, like, you guys are really talented. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're as hard as anyone in the league to guard. And I just think it's starting to show more and more and more. I mean, you talk about a crowded vote. I think we can all agree on the top three most talented players in our girls' league. Try sometimes, John, here in the next couple of weeks, sorting out four through like eight or nine. It's nuts. I mean, it's nuts. And certainly in that discussion is Marcy Dudgeon in the way she's shown to take over games, and then their ability to surround her with scores. You mentioned last week the way Farmer stuffs the stat sheet. This Mullins kid is a terrific young talent that, you know, sometimes gets overshadowed by some of the other freshmen in the league maybe. You know, certainly with Kitchen and Petit and Henry and so forth. So this is a team that I just think is really coming on, and the more they evolve on the defensive end, the more dangerous they become. But then on the other side, I was probably not as quick to jump on the Westfall boys. Again, maybe my eye, as I mentioned last week, you know, looked at their lack of the prototypical point and felt like it was going to cost them. But man, over the last couple of weeks, it's starting to happen, isn't it, John? I mean, they're scoring the basketball. They're scoring into the 60s and playing with some tempo. And then with Southeastern, I think this is a great example of how I still don't think this is a bad basketball team. I just think it's a team that if you've worked with high school kids before, you go back and you take about 4, 5, 6 games in the first month of the season where they basically lost the game, John, in the last, say, 90 seconds. Mm-hmm. And that wears on you. I mean, it is. You keep grinding, you keep grinding, you keep grinding. I still would like to sit here and stay true to how dangerous I think they are in the tournament. But I have to admit, as from a results perspective, that I might have been a little bit wrong on those two basketball teams in terms of maybe giving one a little bit of a longer rope or the other one else maybe a little quick to judge.
So. Okay. John, are you ready for round two? You complete this phrase.
Yeah.
All right. Here, when looking back at our winter shows, I was right about blank, but I have to admit I was wrong about something else.
I was right about Elias McCloskey being a top player in the league, but I think I was wrong about the overall impact a player like Logan Bennett would have on the rest of the league. Just from watching Bennett last year, you could tell he was kind of a year away. But, man, football lifting and just competing at a high level, it filled him out, and he just makes so many different impact plays during games. I know he virtually single-handedly beat us at home the first time we played him with 20 points and a couple, I think it was like 4 steals and a couple blocks. And then we hear last week he goes out with an injury, and then he comes out on Friday night and has a double-double in a win on Friday. So, I mean, he's the type of player who, like, has just really made a big impact on the league. I wouldn't have tapped him as being an all-SVC kid in the preseason, but he is definitely an all-SVC kid right now. And that's one of those big things with that sophomore class at. They've really came on quickly, matured quickly, and he's even a young sophomore. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's going to mature even more between his sophomore and junior year. So that's that, as an opposing coach in the league, is not something I look forward to coaching against. But I will enjoy watching him in the non-league action. And I just wanted to give one more shot on the thing I was right about being. I wanted to give another shout out to Elijah, just after that game, just how he handled himself on and off the court. Just a great kid. Dynamite to watch. The league might be like, we have a lot of young guys in it. League might be a little better overall next year, but it'll be a little worse to not have a kid like Elijah McCloskey in the league next year, with everything he does and how he carries himself and represents Huntington and the township really well.
All right, Shane, we're going to go to you for your second of the 3 fill-in-the-blank answers. We're looking for you to complete this phrase. When looking back at our winter shows, I was right about blank, but I have to admit I was wrong about something. What is it?
I was right about the role of the experienced guard play impacting the standings, but I have to admit that I was wrong about the impact that the post play was going to have. I think if you really look at the complete teams, it comes with a little bit of both. When you were talking there a second, John, I agreed with everything you're saying, but I was kind of preparing for my upcoming answer, and I couldn't help but think of the name Caleb Fogelsong. And even, you know, it's kind of like Riley Black on the girls' side. A lot of times, even when you're not asked to score, you might be asked to go down and bang with the Josie Fisher or Caleb Fogelsong, you know, night in, night out, if they do have that post presence to be able to defend and rebound. Because when I watch Uniota, this is the boys' side now, when I watch Uniota play a couple times in person here recently, and I watch some teams like Piketon play, Huntington's another team that jumps out, their inability to get something in the post, even if it was just a handful of post-ups a night where they could go and get 4 to 6 to 8 points, I think that's really starts to catch up with them in certain matchups. The times I've watched, and John, you know better than anybody, but the times I've watched, you know, Huntington play in person, if I watched Uniota play in person, they've had streaks where they've shot it really, really well from the perimeter. And we talked about the 3-point shot, and we talked about things, but eventually the adjustment I see coaches making is they just start to stretch and stretch and stretch out to the point where at some point you've got to be either through the dribble or through the post entry to get something at or to the rim. And I think that really starts to catch up. I see it on the girls in my girls headline this week where I talked about Emily Coleman and Cottrell and company and what they're able to start doing. We know that Josie Fisher is there at any time. It's almost what the opponent dictates. Does that make sense? At any time, you know, teams want to go back to playing them the way they did the first month. Well, she's going to go like 9 for 10 from the floor, and she's going to have like 26 points, 14 rebounds. That's just what she's going to do. So if teams start to do this and Coleman starts to hit 5 threes and so forth, then, you know, what do you start to do? But I think it's that post presence, that ability to go down inside and get the easy buckets, I think is really good, because we have some phenomenal improved perimeter play in even our girls league. I know a young lady I'm coaching right now, and I watch film from last year to this year of Leah McFadden, really, really impressive. I mentioned Hannah Stark of Edina earlier at Piketon the other night. What we know about Lido and Crothers, but what Odell has done from last year to this year with her game is just terrific, and really gives them another dynamic on both ends of the floor. You're talking about an old senior guard, that experience factor, strong. So, just a lot of good things. We mentioned all the talent, even though they're not old, they're very experienced. I mean, Marcy Dudgeon, you know, keep in mind, John is starting to push what, 55 to 60 career games. You know, kids that have a lot of experience, but some of those teams, maybe just the X factor is that post player. So I'm the first to admit with my guard bias, Bruce, but I think sometimes maybe we overlook that that post play. Just like with Zane Trace's guards, you know, let's not forget about what a Davidson does down there, or obviously a Nesser with his versatility and size. But, you know, you'll block a shot or two, you'll grab 10 rebounds. And what I love about Davidson is he can offer those 8 points, John, and he usually only needs 4 or 5 shots to do it. Yeah. So, yeah, it's not like he's taking shots away from Evans or Nesser, the two that obviously should be shooting the ball. It's every single night, it seems like, you know, Swain and Eisen and Johnson, those guys are getting theirs on like just a handful of shots. It's really impressive.
John, were you surprised that he was right about his point guard play?
No. I don't, like, as a point guard myself, I don't want to, like, act like I was shocked by it either.
But, I understand. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. It was just a softball that he threw up there, so I thought I'd hit it. Okay. All right. We're going to go over to your third opportunity here, John, to complete this sentence. When looking back at our winter shows, I was right about blank, but I have to admit, I was wrong about blank.
I was right about the overall balance and parity of the boys' league, but I was wrong about the difference between the top two teams and the rest of the league. Now, I'd say that as, you know, that's not a slight at the rest of the league. It's just the Edina and St. Trace boys have been able to avoid the upset. While the rest of the league seems to be beating up on each other. I believe we have a 3-way tie with Paint Valley being off.
Half game back, 5-5, yeah, 5-5, 4-5, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's not a big difference between right now the third-place teams and the sixth-place team, or seventh place also. So, I mean, it's only – well, and then Southeastern right now is an eighth, and I think – you mentioned it even. They're really not an eighth place team. If they can get a couple wins, they're going to, I could see them get rolling, because like you mentioned, them losing all those close games, you know, does wear on.
Well, just realize, think about how easily they could be 3-6 or 4-5. And at the end of the night, I know they're not. I know right. That's the first thing people say, you are what your record says you are. But I'm just telling you, in some of those games, they could be.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, it's a very balanced league. Really from top to bottom, it's just, you know, Zane Trace and Adina do have a little bit more right now. But they've also had their share of closer games. You know, it's a very good league overall. We're just, every night's going to be exciting. And at this point, it's kind of, You never know what you're going to get, except for there's going to be at least one or two players for each team that really step up on a nightly basis. And, you know, it's just that makes it really exciting to watch. And I can't wait to be able to get out, you know, near the end of this year and going into the tournament time to be able to watch each of these teams play instead of, you know, we can only watch two teams a night whenever we're playing.
Right. So. All right, Shane, you have your third opportunity to complete this phrase. When looking back at our winter games, I was right about blank, but I have to admit I was wrong about blank.
I was right about 3-7 in the girls' league, but I have to admit that I was a little bit wrong about the Uniota boys' experience. First, on the girls' side, remember what I was saying earlier in the year, 3-7, and a lot of people thought, you know, you're including Adina in there and so forth, and I was like, well, sure, keep in mind Adina in the second half of the year last year beat Paint Valley. If you're going to put Paint Valley in there, you have to put Adina in there, and everyone was trying to stick their nose in with Huntington, and there's been – you know, Paint Valley to an extent, Southeastern. There's been some teams that have, you know, stuck their nose in and been very competitive with Huntington, but we did feel like Huntington had separated to the two until someone had proven differently. And so far, no one's been able to. So I think I feel like I was right on 3-7. I think those matchups in there are crazy, crazy close. I think you've seen it in the final score. I think we've had 3-4 examples, John, where one team leads for 3 quarters and then the other team comes back and wins. You've seen that like 4 or 5 different times in the matchups, and I just think that's what you have. And that's what's so crazy about this game is the difference between winning and losing. The difference between maybe being 9-5 or 5-9 is literally like, you know, 2 calls, 2 shots, and a, you know, decision. You know what I mean? It's like it's that small. So I think we're in for a great second half down the stretch here, where a lot of those teams are going to play head to head. And I think Adina is right at the forefront. I think that was really well said, John, in terms of what Coach Scott's doing there and the way they're starting to come on, becoming a very dangerous opponent. And then where I was coming from, where I have to admit I was wrong on the Uniota boys' experience, you know, coming into the year, I just felt like this group's got to be a little bit more experienced than people think. I'm thinking to myself, the atmospheres they played in last year, I understand the 4 guys they lost, but, you know, with Smith, you know, Smith is a name that will forever be stapled to arguably the most accomplished team in the history of our conference. McKee will be right there with them, albeit a smaller role, certainly was in the middle of that rotation. Isaac Little played, you know, an entire year of varsity basketball in big game. So I just felt like, man, at the guard position, if you're going to be that experienced. But I think where I was probably wrong, and this is shame on me, is I watched them the other night, and they made some really big plays the other night, is there's still an inconsistency that comes from playing a different role. I think what happens, Bruce, that we have to be careful with is sometimes we count the kids that are coming back. We do this at Paint Valley a lot. Okay, they graduate Swingle. Okay, well, man, they return Newland, they return McFadden, they return Grubb, they return Hamlin, and you watch how these kids have to take on some different roles. Mm-hmm. So even though they're back with some experience, you know, maybe 1 year a kid's being asked to be a 7.5 rebound guy. Well, now all of a sudden you're asking them to be a 12.10 rebound guy, and that's a different role. That's a different level of talent. So. And I also see year to year what happens with injuries. I see this with the Paint Valley group a little bit. You know, one kid gets hurt. Well, now not only do you need to do this, you got to pick up a little bit more. You saw it the other night with some foul trouble and different things. Kids asked to do a little bit more, and I thought that started to play a role in Huntington getting back into the game. I think the free throw shooting played a role in Piketon getting back in the game Saturday night. So it is a situation with Uniota that maybe I didn't expect it as much. And maybe that was a little unfair of me, but I think what you're going to start to find down the stretch here, and particularly in the next year, is how a lot of that is going to start to take over. Because in watching your JV team, John, I'd watched them play 3 or 4 times this year, and I know the other night wasn't one of your best games, but you certainly played well. You just didn't shoot it as well. It's a really neat puzzle there to watch how a lot of the individuals you're developing is going to fit into the way Coach Hoops likes to play. And I think that's something really neat to watch as you watch some JV. Because keep in mind, we have two boys teams that don't even have freshman basketball.
Right.
Some of our freshman teams are hit and miss. There's a couple schools this year that have it that are already telling me, we don't know that we can have it next year. So JV basketball becomes a really, really crucial level of basketball for boys, because we just – it's such a hard jump, guys, for the eighth grade to jump to the varsity. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't have a lot of that freshman level, the JV level becomes really, really crucial. And as I was studying this Uniota experience a little bit, I was just kind of looking at some of the pieces going in there. I think that JV league where, you know, John, I know even before that game, you'd given a shout out earlier in the year to Coach Vance and his Huntington team, to the Piketon team, and to Westfall, and to some different teams there throughout the league. We certainly have kids at the JV level that that can certainly impact the varsity level as early as next year. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, I do completely. Just kids that can do different things. It's not just necessarily a scoring option or anything, but it's like I have a couple really good defenders and one really good shooter that I think could impact in a way. Just different teams, like you can just see it. Like a Dalton Haubau played most of the game on Friday against me, and you could just tell that him handling the ball, you know, they're obviously going to lose a ton with losing Elijah in a pretty good varsity class over there, or good senior class over there. But a kid like Haubau is going to help. And there's different JV players around the league that can really impact, and ones that I think will be good to watch out for next year, because really the other coaches in the league, I do think, do a really good job. Make different adjustments throughout the game, and from first time to second time. And, it's just I think that'll help our league as a whole going forward also.
Some good evaluation there, gentlemen. Admitting that you were wrong is part of the battle, I guess. And also patting yourself on the back is good from time to time as well. Up next, guys, we try to move quickly through a variety of fan feedback, including sectional voting, player of the year performances, more on the shot clock, and Uniota facilities. And a special, special segment here coming up with John Bruce. Don't go away.
Yes.
Well, show 241 of SVC Sports Talk rolls on now, and we have some fan feedback here. This segment again brought to us by Crown Hill Golf Club. Crown Hill Golf Club is located at 9500 U.S. Route 22 West in Williamsport. The telephone number there is 740-986-4653. And as Shane mentioned earlier, they're doing some youth simulator work up there. And Shane, what's the email address if there's an interest in doing that?
Kids Play. That's TOO at yahoo.com. Again, if a junior golf or junior high or high school golfer here at an area school, get up there and get with Kevin, and you will not be sorry. They'll do some good work with your game.
All righty. Well, we do have some feedback here, Shane, and I'm going to let you kind of lead us through this discussion. First topic with the feedback is sectional seeding.
Yeah, three different feedback this week, guys. I'm just kind of lumping all together. Basically, the gist is this. One even kind of put it to me in a coach's corner type of thing, wondering how I approach it if I were a varsity head coach and I had a vote. Is it wins? Is it schedule? How do you balance those things? One interesting one is, what if you have a kid who is injured? So what if you have a great player that you know is injured and that kid's coming back? How do you handle that? Well, guys, all I'll do is I'll throw out this is, you know, you try your very best. This is so hard, and it even gets harder now that it's on computer and you don't get a chance to go down face to face and talk to some people and get a chance to talk to coaches around the area. But, you know, to be honest, you obviously your record is going to play a huge role. Mm-hmm. Once the record is what it says you are, as I like to say, you do try to look at, okay, schedule. A lot of times for me, I can be a big head-to-head guy if I'm really stuck. Did these two teams play? As far as the injury, I think the human factor, you can't help, but if you've seen team and you know how good they are. But, you know, sometimes, John, that's bothered me over the years because, you know, like right now, if Zane Trace is supposed to be the one seed and something would happen to one of their starters, which would be terrible, does that mean they shouldn't be the league champ?
Right.
Like, so I mean, like, if they end the year and they go into the Edina game 13-0, and then all of a sudden someone gets hurt and they lose, does that mean they shouldn't be co-champs? Well, because that's not, you know, they're 0-1 without them. You know what I mean? I don't like the injury factor. I understand the question, and I have seen voting's impacted. But I think, John, if we're going to go the old off the record onto the record discussion here, the human factor is you can't help but starting to look at those other brackets of, okay, I'm in this 8-9 game, who's the one? I'm in this 7-10 game, who's the two? You know what I'm saying? Like, and mm-hmm. and I'm not saying that you are cheating. I'm just saying that it's human nature to start to take a look at, you know, the resumes are almost identical. You know, a lot of times, I guess what it is, Bruce, is sometimes you can make things say what you want them to say.
Oh, really?
So sometimes it's, you know, well, you'll use the injury when it's convenient, or you'll use the schedule when it's convenient. That's where we get in trouble sometimes. That's why I've always said I would be in total favor of, in today's technology, I've said I'm not smart enough to figure out what it is, but in today's technology, I would love to see some sort of program, some sort of scoring system or standings that could be used that everyone knows up front, and you could go, because the voting thing is a little bit shaky to put it nicely.
Political.
Yes. And I think it's worse now that you don't have to see people face to face. I thought it was going to be better because I didn't think it mattered. But I mean, it's a lot easier to vote someone down if you don't have to ever look at them about it. Now I'll go one way with the injury, and I've talked to Coach Bradley about it at Edina. Remember the Corey Wyman injury a couple years ago with Westfall? Well, Westfall ends up being the 14 seed. Adina's the 3 seed. And, Wyman's back for the tournament game, and Westfall wins. Well, Westfall was probably the second best team in the league with Wyman that year. But when he doesn't play the whole year, I don't remember if they finished 7th or 8th, but they were really low in the standings, and, you know, they go down, and they almost get to the convo with, you know, high double-digit losses. So, I mean, just – sometimes, you know, you never know. But also, I know if I'm in there and another coach says, well, we got this guy coming back, we should be seated higher. Well, are they coming back? What degree are they coming back? So I do agree with you on the injuries. Now, if you want to get political, I've told Derek Webb, since he's down in Portsmouth, wait till you look at the Division IV sectional seedings coming out with where South Webster ends up and where Colgrove ends up, because I would be willing to bet that those two play each other in a sectional final in their sectional, and they are definitely the two best teams in their sectional. But South Webster had, they may be at 10 losses now, but they play in a ridiculous league. So, and it's going to get matched up because they don't have any league help. So that'll be one to look forward to outside of the SBC. But I do think league affiliation has something to do with it also. And like you said, Shane, the human factor of looking ahead, some people might think, oh, maybe I can finagle this to where we don't have to play that team until maybe a district final.
Right.
And yeah. So, I mean, it's just, it is what it is. I wish we'd go to, for the sectional seating, I wish that we would go to, you know, what the other 5 districts in the state have, as opposed to only our district, to where you vote for everyone in the district instead of just your little small pod. And then you get to place where you play instead of, you know, how it is now. But that'll never change, despite the entire state doing it differently than we do.
Well, and I'm glad he said the thing about the league, Bruce, because, you know, you just talking to people around the area, I know like a Uniota girls going to D2. Our league is not going to be really highly respected around the area. So how they perform against this team from West Virginia and how they perform against Courthouse and McLean, and, you know, hopefully the big Walnut game gets to get played and so forth, is very, very important to them, because, again, we're in a league situation right now where you know, we're trying to rebuild it back up, and we're trying to get back to where girls basketball once was there for about a 15-20 year period. But I think that league affiliation thing you're saying there, John's really, really important.
Yep. Plus, Shane, admit it, you miss the sandwiches down there, don't you?
Well, sure. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Obviously.
Yes, he does.
I thought that was already assumed.
So. Okay. All right. Next topic on the fan feedback is POY performances.
Well, this obviously came off of Friday night's particular performance that we've talked about with Elijah McCloskey. People talking about how can one game be a POY performance in terms of the big picture? Like, if you're looking over 22 games, how significant can one performance be? And, you know, the one email said to me, I think they referenced like the Heisman moment, you know, like in the Heisman race mm-hmm. every year, they always talk about you have to have that one moment or whatever. So I think there's some fairness to that. I think that obviously what you do over the long haul is this. And you know, obviously what Elijah did the other night was really special. Guys, I want to say this, and I'm sure we'll talk about it more, is I understand at the end of the day, there's going to be people vote for Cam Evans. They vote for Elijah McCall. I just hope we understand, because of what we just graduated here in the last two or three years of our league, I don't know if we appreciate just how good these two young players are. I mean, these two young men. I mean, Elijah and Cam are really, really talented guards, and I love the guard position, so I analyze it and I'm very critical of it. And I'm telling you, these two can really, really play. And I hope that, you know, everyone had their opinion. I'm sure if you root for Huntington or Zane Trace or whatever, that's going to sway your opinion. I'm just telling you that these two are really, really good. So beyond who wins an award or whatever, I just hope we understand just what we're watching.
Anything to add there, John?
Shane pretty much nailed it spot on. I mean, I like the comment about the Heisman
moment,
the Heisman moment. But yeah, it's just I think, you know, I'm a big proponent for Elijah, but I also Cam's consistency throughout the year. I mean, he's averaging like 23, 24 points a game, and he's doing it virtually every night. And he can impact the game in so many ways also. So I think you're not going to go wrong with whoever they pick. And it's just, I just think both of them have been just really good teammates, really good players on both ends of the court too. Neither one's the kid that just goes out and scores and then doesn't do anything on the defensive end. So, I mean, that's something to kind of admire also, because I think they both have put forward great performances all year long, and I think both would be very both would be very deserving.
And I think the first team can get crowded there too. You're hearing me talk, Bruce, yeah, about three through about eight or nine on the girls' side, depending on a lot of that's going to be determined by some of these head-to-head team matchups in terms of who finishes as high as third or seventh. On the boys' side, I think it's worthy of some mention too. The depth of Adina is hard to sort out. The depth beyond Evans on Zane Trace is hard to sort out. I know some people are going to disagree there on their second player. The Blanton kid's been terrific. What, he has two 27-point games this weekend. On down the line. So I just hope there at the top that people understand that I know we graduate a lot of talent the last couple of years here, but man, I understand how good these two guys are that we get to watch every night out.
Here is a topic that seems to come up every two shows or so: the shot clock response. Shot clock response, Shane.
Well, John was called brilliant in one Facebook message.
Yeah.
Join in agreeing with John in terms of the shot clock and so forth. And the foul trouble thing came up two or three times as well. But for the most part on the shot clock response, I don't know. I will say this, that if you look at what needs immediate change in basketball, the shot clock is down the list. I responded to the topic itself last week in terms of what I feel about the shot clock. But yeah, first and foremost, do I think shot clock is at the top one or two of what our game needs to change? I'll say no. You know, I mean, we talk about fouling. We talk about how offensive skill is not very good nowadays. Plus, defensively, you're just allowed to put your hands and forearms all over the ball handler and make it impossible to play in space. So, I mean, those are things we need far more help with. But so again, on the shot clock response, I feel I did a week ago, but I am the first to say out of some of those that you were throwing, John, I thought you had some really good topics last week, and you're going to have another one for me here down the list here later. But
that's right.
I think the shot clock isn't – I think what happens sometimes, guys, is people are afraid to change. And I think there's a balance. Sometimes a lot of we older coaches will say just because we used to do it different doesn't mean we did it wrong. But I also think that people are scared to death of change, and they have to be able to say, they'd be like, oh, you know, we used to do it this way. And, you know, you want to look at them and say that, well, we used to – use the bathroom outside, then we thought this indoor plumbing thing was good. You know what I mean? Like, it was – so don't be so afraid of change to where we – I think it's a happy medium, I guess. But, yes, the shot clock I think would be great for the game. I think it's way overblown in terms of how hard it would be to put in. I mean, in the late 80s, we redid floors and painted three-point lines on every court. I don't think it would be that hard to do, but I will say that there's far, far more important things that we could attack first in the game.
Now, I do want to throw out there on the shot clock stuff. I do think it would make end of quarter situations a lot cleaner for teams because, I'm sure you noticed for us on Friday night, we're not very good at the end of quarter stuff. We try to get to the last shot, and sometimes it's just not going to be a good look. So I think practicing on that with the shot clock would actually help. It would make end of game situations a little easier to watch instead of a team just kind of struggling to get in their spacing. So I'm not 100% against it, but there are, you know, you could still change my mind on it if you really needed to. But I do completely agree with like the two hands on the offensive player. Like, we have low scoring games. It's not because of skill. It's because these, like, you can do whatever you want on the perimeter. But if you touch them with a body on the inside, it's probably getting called a foul, but you can have two hands on them. You can guide them wherever you want to go. It's got to be really difficult for an offensive player, especially ball handler, which is why also I admire how well, like that, how you talked about the experienced guard play, how well they've dealt with it throughout the year also.
Well, I think that's part of the experience. You know,
yes.
We'll talk about this in Coach's Corner the other night, but I'm telling you, older guards, and they understand the strength and how strong you have to play, it's a big factor.
Our last fan feedback here is entitled Unioto Facilities.
Well, now, I'll allow John to maybe just sit this one out because that's, I don't want to put him in an uncomfortable situation. This kind of comes from my – I was, first of all, for the Unioto people out there, relax. Okay, I was joking last week when I said that there's the Unioto conspiracy theory or whatever for the new gym. So, you know, it was just a joke. But we were talking about different clocks, and this gym doesn't work. We got to move games over here and so forth. And I guess here's my take on this. I mean, obviously, I do not live in the Unioto district. My whole adult life's been in another SVC school, and even when I've gone to another school in the SVC, it wasn't Unioto. So my parents obviously follow Vinton County and Paint Valley because they follow my brother's coaching career as well as mine. But they still live and are still incredible supporters of Unioto sports. And, you know, going all the way back to when I was in junior high, I can remember the days of the levee being a mess. And I can remember Unioto being in serious trouble. And I can remember how it impacted sports. And, you know, so as these different renewals and levees and so forth over the years have come up, I think that needs to be your first and foremost. So I think Unioto has made an intelligent decision there of making that the first priority. But it's somewhere down the line, I guess all I would say as a Unioto grad is this. You hope Unioto people, and I know I'm probably going to make somebody mad here, and that's okay. You hope Unioto people don't become so spoiled that they don't appreciate what they have and what they need to continue to give the people who are providing what they have. You know, when you look at the likes of Matt Hoops, Jeff Miller, Natalie Stolle. These are Uniota lifers. These are people that did it as student athletes. These are people in your community. These are people who teach your young people. These are people who have coached and put programs at a really, really high level. They're all three Hall of Famers, I assume. If they're not already, I would ask the committee why not. I don't know if all three are or not, John. Maybe you could comment on that, but they should be. But my point is, I'm not here to say, because it's not my money, I'm not here to say what gym should be built, how big we should build it. I think sometimes we build these things too big and it takes away atmosphere. Sometimes I think we don't have enough locker room space or other creative design. But I'm not here to debate that right now. I'm just here to debate why the two sides can't come together and figure out what needs to be built and get it built. Because anything that Uniota has should be top level of the league. There's no excuses not to. I mean, the programs that they have, unless they self-destruct, unless civil war breaks out within Uniota, Uniota is going to accidentally be a top half team in any sport we play in this league. So it would be a real shame, in my opinion, if that self-destruction happened just because people can't communicate and move this place forward. And this has been where I've kind of taken the one thing I always say about Paint Valley, you know, in boxing, we say pound for pound. I'll say for enrollment figure to enrollment figure, I will stack Paint Valley's facilities up against anybody in terms of what we provide our young people. And that's something I've always taken great pride in. And as I look around the league, it excites me for our league. It's not just for the school. It excites me for the league when I see what Zane Trace does with their football field. It excites me for the league when I see Piketon add new facilities or Southeastern add new facilities. I would still question down there with what they've accomplished in football over the last 25 years. Why are they still playing football on that thing down at Piketon? You know, that's just my opinion. I'm not saying that to be mean. I'm just asking. Like, you know, for everything they've done down there, you know, with Coach Gallion and so forth. So my point is, and I'm not even asking you to comment on this, John, because I know that it would be unfair. My point is simply that, you know, gosh, I know I've made Westfall people mad. My point is, you know, invest in your young people and invest what sports will do. I can, and I know I'm ranting on and on, Bruce, I'll hurry. When I was a junior high AD at Paint Valley, I can remember us being so excited when they changed the admission price to $3 instead of $2, because we were going to have the opportunity to not lose money on volleyball or girls basketball, and we were even going to be able to make a little money on boys basketball. Well, you know, the Uniotas of the world, they don't fall into that trap. You see what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. You know, the only way they're ever going to stop growing is to just become so spoiled. Maybe spoiled. Bruce, you're better at this than I am. Is there a better word to use than spoiled?
I'm sure there is, but it just escapes me.
Yeah,
at this
stuck
point.
In their way, whatever. Yeah. That's all I would challenge is I know there's people like my dad over the years that what he did with the Christmas Classic and the way he supported junior high boys, junior high girls, yeah, cheerleading and so forth. And then what's so funny about that is the school that ended up killing that in the league fighting back against it is the same school that runs the same Christmas Classic now and makes all the money. You know, it's just mm-hmm. there's a lot of dynamics there that, you know, we could almost do a whole show on. But I've been asked about that several times this week, and I just thought it was something. Not that Hoopsie or Coach Miller or Natalie need me to go to bat for him. I just think, you know, it's something that that I feel pretty strongly about. You know, even though my ties are somewhere else now, you know, as a Uniota grad and those being my friends, something I'll always be connected to in some way.
All right. We're going to give you the contact information in a little bit so you can give your thoughts on these topics, this topic and others, obviously. In just a little bit, we'll get you that. But John contacted Shane and I sometime during the week. I can't recall exactly when it was. But he said he wanted to do what we did last week, at least for one topic.
Just one topic.
Yeah, just one topic. So he's going to pontificate here on a topic, and then Shane is going to evaluate his mental state regarding said topic. So, John, go ahead and pontificate here.
I've been so excited all week when he said this.
I'm calling this the name game, and it is – it's time to get rid of ladies. So it's not the Lady Warriors. It's the Warriors. They're in the school. I mean, it should be one school program. To me, it's you don't need to say the Lady Bearcats. They're the Bearcats. Lady Huntsman, they're the Huntsmen. Lady Shermans, they're the Shermans. Lady Pioneers, they're Pioneers. I just think just say boys and girls, because it's not like you're saying the men Sherman tanks. The men Bearcats, the male warriors. Like it's not that way. And I've heard it for the last few years. I don't hear it as much now, but it's like, to me, it's just, it's one school. They should all be under the same name, just across the board. Because is there, like, I'll go with you on this, Bruce. Is there such thing as Lady Vikings, or are they just Vikings? I mean, like, if you're looking at who they're named after, I mean, it's just like, and also a Sherman tank, is there a male and female Sherman tank? Is like, I don't know. It's maybe it's kind of technically millennial stuff, but I just don't see the need for it anymore. I've talked to a couple of the girls basketball players, and they agree with me. It's just like, because they're a part of the school. It's the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now, Shane, has John lost his mind, or is he brilliant?
If I'm being honest, this might be one of the first times in 240, what is it, one shows?
Yeah, yeah.
That I'm almost speechless. Like, I have to admit that when he gave the title name game throughout the week.
Yeah.
But I did not think that's where he was going. Can't say that I don't agree with it. I'm almost curious, Bruce, to get your answer on the technical term of Lady Vikings. Like, you know what I mean? He kind of throws out a point here that I guess is correct. So I'm going to go ahead and give him the brilliant title just because I guess I do agree with him. I have to be, if I'm being honest, I don't know that I've ever stopped to think about it. So I will say that John hasn't necessarily lost his mind. He just might be a little bored. Maybe he needs to get a few hobbies here.
I agree with that.
He is coaching, you know, two or three sports and doing a podcast show and working on, you know, and so forth. So he does have a lot on his plate. So the fact that he's
coming up,
you know, taking
this,
the time to, yeah, even go out and research it with some of our student athletes in the league is impressive. But yeah, John, I'll agree with you there. Bruce, I would love, you're usually really good at this stuff. I'd love to get your take on this.
Well, the only thing, if I say, and people know I'm affiliated with the Vinton County program, but if I say the Vikings are playing tomorrow night, what's your question going to be, John?
Boys or girls?
Okay. So the boy Vikings are playing tomorrow night, or the girl Vikings are playing tomorrow night. So
the Vikings boys basketball team is playing tomorrow night. How about that?
Well, but somebody may want to know, is it the boy Vikings or the girl Vikings?
Well, just,
so
just
now I'm going to have to stick a qualifier in there somehow, and tell
which
them.
This will take time. Okay. It'll take time.
We've not done it that way before, John.
I know. Okay. But down your way, granted, they play on different nights of the week. Like,
yeah,
the boys up here play Friday, Saturdays, of course, because whatever. And then the girls play on Tuesday, Thursdays. So, I mean, you know, it's, you have a better idea up here. So I can see that, but we'll do this over time.
Okay.
How about that?
All right. Okay. Well, fans, listeners, countrymen, we need some input from the fandom out there as to John's mental state again once more. And Derek, if you're listening, you can tweet this out.
You know Derek has a thought on this.
Yes.
I'd love to hear from.
Yes. Yeah. We'd like to hear that. And then we'd like for you to tweet this out, Derek, so that you can get, you know, he is verified, you know, and with Twitter. So he has a verified account. So we kind of need him to add to this, and we'll give you the contact information coming up in just a bit. But as always, we're going to finish our basketball shows with another segment of Coach's Corners. Stay tuned. Our final segment of 241 shows is going to be brought to you by North Fork Animal Clinic. Again, Dr. Blake Lloyd and his staff out at 2260 Anderson Station Road in Chillicothe, where we care. Open Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., Saturday, 9 to 12. And, of course, the doggy daycare has extended hours Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., Saturday and Sunday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. That is North Fork Animal Clinic, 740-773-7387. All right, gentlemen, we move into our final segment here. It is Coach's Corners. Coach's Corner, one corner, Bruce, and we complete this segment or this phrase. When I was a player or a young coach, I wish someone would have told me blank. We're going to go to John first on this one. John, I know you've done a lot of reflecting this week. When you were a young player or a young coach, what do you wish someone would have told you?
I wish someone would have told me about the importance of having a great scorekeeper. Now, don't get me wrong. I've never had a bad scorekeeper, but I also don't know if I've appreciated the job of all that a scorekeeper can do until having someone like we have Lisa Hill that does our three books. So she does freshman JV varsity, and she is just on the ball everywhere we go, home or away. She knows, she's always locked into what's going on in the game, and I know I don't have to worry about what's like if the scoreboard happens to be wrong. I can just ask her, like, is that right? And then she'll take care of it. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have to go worry about anything else. So it just makes things so much easier to have a good scorekeeper like that, because if I have something wrong in the book, she can fix it. Or she will call me over and verify instead of just showing up right before the game and, oh, maybe it's right, maybe it's wrong. Not saying other schools have that, but it makes things so much easier just as a coach to only have to worry about coaching the players rather than one extra thing. And also she got the kids pizza for the bus ride home last night since It was going to be icy and didn't want the kids to go out. So so that's just a topper on top of things. But I mean, it's just, I know there's been times where I'll go back to when Coach Hoops was up at Westfall and we were up there, we had 2 points taken off the board and no one could figure out where they came from or like why they were taken off until we rewatched the game later. And our scorekeeper at the time we had two free throws erased in the book. Like, well, we lost that game by 1 point. So, I mean, it's, you know, there are little things that having a great scorekeeper can really affect. I've had a couple of substitute scorekeepers this year and they've done a great job. I mean, it's a very important and sometimes forgot about piece to your basketball program.
If you get a good scorekeeper, you hang on to them because I don't know how long she's done the books, but
it's a hard job.
It is. It is. A lot of pressure on you, and they're typically keeping you in line with the timeouts, number of fouls each player has, and how many timeouts the other coach has, and so forth. So it can really be a big asset. It really can. Okay, Shane? Go ahead.
The week here, for the coaches' court. Yeah. Okay. I want to go, guys, with – I wish – I would have understood far more as a player, and then I started to as a coach, but not until into my later years here if I understood the importance of understanding and scouting officials and understanding how to apply it as a part of the game plan. I think as I focus more into the second half of my career on the defensive end, you know, each coaching staff you're on, you have different roles and different things, and You start to catch on a little bit as a player when you play the point guard position for, you know, 3.5-4 years, and you get a lot of the same officials and so forth. You catch on to this, but then as you get into coaching, you don't quite understand maybe how to coach it, how to get kids understanding. And you know, the reason I say that is just this past week, just this past week, I mean, I was just kicking myself after a game. I mean, well into the night of, you know, just trouble sleeping of I knew exactly what was going to happen in the first 4 to 5 minutes of a game. Sometimes you don't want to overload young kids and you feel like you don't want to tell them too much. But I think you have to understand how important some of these different things are and what you can share with them about how certain officials are going to call games and so forth. So, you know, some games, as you know, John, you have a certain group and you know, look, they are going to come right out and take control. You have to get your hands off. We can't be in foul trouble. We can't do this. Then you have other officiating crews that show up and, like, you wonder if two of them left their whistle in the truck. You know what I mean? Like, I'm being serious. Like, it's just going to be physical. And in this particular game, I understood what was going to happen and we didn't adjust very well. I didn't adjust very well. We just got flat slapped in the mouth the first 4 or 5 minutes. Then we settled in and it was too late. And I really felt like I could have done more to help a couple of our younger guards, you know, settle in, knowing the officials as well as I knew, because we had a really good crew. So I'm not saying that it was a really good crew. And what was unique is, as I started to study this over the last 10 games, as I've taken notes that I've coached, we've had probably 6 or 7 distinct styles of you know, this particular group's going to call a little bit more of the hand check. This group's going to let you bang in the post. This group's going to call the hold. This group, you know, is going to keep the rebounder off the back. And all of those things can be very, very important, John, to understanding how to. I can still to this day remember Coach Lovely would put things to watch, and he would put little things down there. Hey, this officiating crew will do this. And it might have just been one comment, and there might have only been 2 or 3 of us in the room that it even helped or whatever, but it was still very, very valuable, especially at the point guard position, to understand something. So what I would tell coaches is understand the rules. This really happens in baseball a lot, John. You know, I heard in the Michigan-Wisconsin game the other day, you know, how the coaches were even talking, maybe he was being a little sarcastic, but he was talking about, you know, educating himself on some of the rules and some different things and so forth. But I think the more you can understand the side of officiating, I think it gives you a better insight on how to teach your offensive moves as well as your defensive strategies and some of the different things you're trying to accomplish. So that's just something that really jumps out at me. I know it's something that I really reflected on this week. It's something I've done in the past, but it's something I probably need to do much better. And then I think I even need to go as far to trying to utilize it more in my game planning and understanding some advantages, disadvantages that you can coach for or against.
I think that's spot on, Shane. I've seen enough reffing crews come through that you kind of know what you're going to get if you can just remember what you got last time. I mean, that's exactly
right. In the words of Don Neff, one of my first mentors in coaching, that's why you write it down.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
In that Don Neff voice, he'd be like, Shane, that's why you write it down so you can remember it. You know what I mean? Like,
I can hear that too.
Yes.
All right. Guys, there are contact information if you'd like to write in and let us know your thoughts on any of these topics that we've talked about. You can do so. Contact Shane through email at admin1@svcsportszone, through Twitter at SVC Sports Zone is his handle. He uses the hashtag SVC Sports Zone. Maintains 2 profiles on Facebook, Shane Combs SVC Sports Zone and SVCSportsZone.com. John's email address is jbruce1018@yahoo.com, and his Twitter handle, of course, @CoconutWallPapa, and he uses the hashtag as well, SVC Sports Talk. Derek, who's not with us obviously on the podcast, but contributes from time to time and helps us out, he has that verified account where in Twitter, where his handle is DW1509, and his email address, DerekW1509@gmail.com. Going a little long this week. Go ahead.
Hey, I just want to throw out there, he's doing that. I would contact him if there's some type of story that feels like it needs to be told. I would get a hold of him because he's such a good writer.
Mm-hmm.
And he cares about the kids and the community so much that even if he's in another community, he will do what he can to get the story out there. you know, it's just it's really good. And you know, I think it's important to realize what we have with him being a part of the website also.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Shane?
Well, and guys, I think that's well said, and right on that line, John, I didn't want to get out of here this week. I know you and I, being SVC lifers, and you and I being baseball people, obviously, yeah. Just a lot of thoughts and prayers to the Kunkel family, to the Adina community. Just really, really cool how our community and how our league can rally around one another. I've said over the 10 years of the website, I love how we can hate each other in a sports sense on a Friday night, but love each other when it comes to real life. So mm-hmm. I just think that's SVC strong at its best, and certainly in the thoughts and prayers. So I know we go a little long, but people seem to be enjoying the show this particular year. So the longer, the better in some cases. Maybe some people disagree with that. So, but Bruce, I appreciate everything you do in getting us up and posted each week, and we'll do it again next week. So guys, until next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center and all the other sponsors on the website, for Bruce Knox and all the people behind the scenes and at DBK Media Services, and for John Bruce, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportZone.com, where we are 100% SVC, 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC, 100% of the time.